Welcome to episode 290 of the Selling Your Screenplay podcast. I'm Ashley Scott Myers, screenwriter and blogger over at sellingyourscreenplay.com. Today I'm interviewing writer-director Cal Barnes. He is an actor and a writer-director who's out there making things happen for himself. He's got a bunch of short films and features that are all coming out over the next few months. He's one of those guys with a lot of energy who's really just out there just making things happen, creating projects for himself. So stay tuned for that interview. If you find this episode valuable, please help me out by giving me a review in iTunes or leaving a comment on YouTube or retweeting the podcast on Twitter or liking or sharing it on Facebook. These social media shows really do help spread word about the podcast, so they're very much appreciated. Any websites or links that I mention in the podcast can be found on my blog in the show notes. I also publish a transcript with every episode in case you'd rather read the show or look at something later on. You can find all the podcast show notes at www.sellingyourscreenplay.com/podcast, and then just look for episode number 290. If you want my free guide, How to Sell a Screenplay in 5 Weeks, you can pick that up by going to sellingyourscreenplay.com/guide. It's completely free. You just put in your email address and I'll send you a new lesson once per week for 5 weeks, along with a bunch of bonus lessons. I'll teach the whole process of how to sell your screenplay in that guide. I'll teach you how to write a professional logline and query letter and how to find agents, managers, and producers who are looking for material. Really is everything you need to know to sell your screenplay. Just go to sellingyourscreenplay.com/guide. So now let's get into the main segment. Today I'm interviewing writer-director Cal Barnes. Here is the interview. Welcome, Cal, to the Selling Your Screenplay podcast. I really appreciate you coming on the show with me today.
Hey, Ashley, thanks for having me. It's a real honor.
So to start out, maybe you can tell us a little bit about your background. Where did you grow up and how did you get interested in the entertainment business?
I grew up in Salem, Oregon. I didn't really come from like an artistic family, like a film family or anything. I think the only person, my aunt was like an international model. She was like the only, and she was gone. Like she was always traveling. So I just knew that was cool when I was younger. Mm-hmm. She was, and everyone else was in our hometown, you know? So I didn't really, grow up, you know, in that background, but, I didn't even really see film as really a possibility or how it was done. I just loved movies, you know, since I was a kid. Mm-hmm. It was a way to escape, and I just thought it was amazing. Like anytime I hang out with my friends, it's movie night, you know. And I loved, you know, in high school I really got into indie film and, you know, Cameron Crowe, and like I just loved good indie film, whatever, you know, Garden State, whatever my definition was at the time. So after I traveled a little bit after high school, I traveled abroad, like took a year off, and like I didn't really know what I wanted to do. So I traveled, I lived in Maui for like 6 months, and then I trekked in Nepal and I went to Thailand and just was like finding myself.
Yeah, wow.
And then I came to college, and like if I look back, I was always, writing was actually always a thing for me. I didn't really see it as a career option, but I was always just like very gifted at it. And it didn't kind of click until, you know, later on, and once I was in Hollywood. But I'd always used to be kind of cool in school. I would write stories in class in like English, and everyone always wanted to hear my stories. They were like, "Cal," you know, and like I'd write these epic stories and read them, and then they also in college too. Like I took 1 year of college at Portland State, and you know, I would write papers, and my teachers would always bring me in and be like, "This is incredible work. Like, I don't even know how you came up with this." I'd be like, "Yeah, I guess I was just like looking for. I knew I maybe wanted to start writing at that time." And then really what brought me to LA was acting. Is I was living in Portland, like downtown, and I took a drama, a theater class, like my second term, and I just went around Portland and watched plays. And it was so incredible just watching all these incredible plays in Portland, which has a great theater scene. And then, after that term of watching plays, I'm like, maybe I should try acting. I mean, it's just so incredible, you know? And so I took this beginning acting class at Portland State, and with my this teacher, Mike O'Connell, who's probably really responsible for the fact that I have a career in Hollywood at all. And, you know, I was acting, and he was like, you know, you should really consider maybe out of, like, it was a beginning class, so the competition was low, but out of everyone in that class, I was like one of two people that people were like, you could probably do this, you know? So yeah, I, he was like, you know, you should maybe really consider this. And that was like literally all I needed. I was looking for a way to start my life. And I just like packed up my car and drove down to LA. And that's how I ended up here. Yeah.
And so let's talk about that for a second, because I think I'm sure there's a lot of people listening to this podcast thinking, oh, maybe I can move to LA. Talk about what that experience is like. Everything you just throw in the car, you pull into LA. How'd you find an apartment? How'd you find a job? Did you have a nest egg of money to let you go for 2, 3, 4, 6 months? Maybe sort of describe some of that process of actually putting a beachhead in here in LA.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, one is all I needed was that, you know, with Mike saying that to me, it was really like the first time a person called out the artist in me, you know, and like to hear someone that I looked up to be like, you know, you can do this. Like, it was just like really enabling, you know? And so that was really all I needed to just be like, I'm going to take this risk. I guess it's sort of a personality thing too, is like, I like adventure. You know, I've always, even when I was a kid, I was always going on adventures in the creek and like going off by myself into uncharted lands or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, so once, I guess the move was really just, it was funny, I'll never forget, there was this job, I was pretty poor living in Oregon and like living off student loans, and I wanted this job as this bar back at this really high-end restaurant where I would be probably making a lot of money for me at the time. And literally the day I was leaving, I get the call and they're like, you got the job. I'd been looking for a job for like 6 months. So it's like, I have $300. I have like my, you know, I have my Volkswagen that I still have, my 98 GTI that I'm still paying off. And you know, this job that I've wanted calls me, and it was really like the choice, you know. I was like, wow, like if I'm going to stay, like this is it. And if I'm going to go, I mean, I remember just being like, no, like this is, I have to just do it. And I think it's, like the move is really just, if you kind of just need that catalyst, I guess, you know, if someone wants to do it, I think it really helps to be, you know, have some kind of success wherever you are that propels you, even if it's just like, you know, being top of your class in acting, or, you know, you write something that shows some promise or something that you like, you can take down here that gives you some kind of hope that you can make it. It's such a competitive industry. But yeah, I mean, I remember just driving down. Luckily, I had one contact, my aunt. She lived in Santa Monica. But I knew that was, you know, I didn't have too much time there. You know, I knew I'd have like a time limit. So I stayed with her like for a month or two. And I just drove around the city looking for jobs, mostly like just a survival job so I could start making money. And I just would stay at her house and then go out all day and just like drive around LA, one to like learn the city, and then also to just try to find jobs. And then, yeah, I mean, it was a really challenging time. It was just a lot to tackle. I was even, you know, I spent some nights after that, and it wasn't that she was kicking me out. I just felt, you know, bad. And so I spent some time in my car as well, which is like a lot of my favorite actors did. So I guess maybe it's like a rite of passage or in favorite writers. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's definitely hard, and I would definitely suggest if you could save up any kind of money, please do it. Just take it easy on yourself. I guess just like learn the city. I think knowing where you're at is huge. If you have a car, I'd say just drive around, go to the different towns, try to get some bearing of where you are in such a big place.
What was your first job? What was the job that you first got, your survival job?
My first job, I was a valet at the Fairmont Miramar Hotel at Santa Monica.
Okay.
At Wilshire and what's that street? Oh, Ocean Avenue. Okay. Yeah, right there. So it was kind of cool. I mean, it was a really cool place to work.
Yeah. And then you got an apartment from there too. You kind of got an apartment and just got your life basically going.
Yep. I had a, at Park La Brea, I got an apartment in one of the towers. I remember it was like The Hills was going on at the time, that show. So I was like, oh, this is where it's at. This is where all the young people are, you know? So I hear from people I've met, I wasn't the only person that had that idea. So it's pretty funny looking back.
Yeah. Okay. So you have the apartment, you have this job as a valet. What were some of your first steps then to actually turn this into a career? Were you writing this whole time? Did you start trying to get an agent for your acting? Maybe walk us through that a little bit.
Yeah. That definitely a good question. I really came down here just for like, when I took the acting class, the writing, screenwriting, I didn't even really know movies were written. I mean, I knew they were written, but I didn't understand. I've never even seen a screenplay. Mm-hmm. I've seen plays. I haven't seen a screenplay. So I came down here really just for acting. And I just started auditioning. I just, like, you know, I came down, met a bunch of actors. I can't remember, like, the exact pacing. I mean, I was making – once I got that job, I started making money, and then I found out about, like, Actors Access, LA Casting. Mm-hmm. Submitted for a bunch of those. I probably did, like, 20 short films, honestly, unpaid short films, because I knew I just wanted to start leading projects and just get that experience on set. Like, because I was 21, and I had zero set experience, so I knew that, like, anything I could get on set, especially, like, a leading role, I think that's what was cool about student films, is I could come in as an unknown and play these leading parts, which, if you don't, for TV, if you're an unknown, you're maybe getting a line or two. Mm-hmm. So, like, that was cool.
How did you get these acting gigs on these student films?
So, like, just, you know, just submitting on LA Actors Access, LA Casting, and then you know, auditioning. Yeah, mm-hmm. Auditioning and then booking. And I remember, yeah, I mean, that's really what I did for a couple of years, is just that. And it was very, I got an agent too. I met through, like, I started meeting actors. I got a recommendation. And that was cool. I started going out for stuff, booked a few, like, it was all like a few little non-union commercials. I was still, you know, majorly struggling. You know, really, these jobs didn't pay anything. Mm-hmm. And if anything, I was paying to work on it, you know, with time and gas and mm-hmm. taking work off. So it was very hard. And I was paying for class, you know. So, you know, I was making more money than I've ever made and had zero to show for it at the end of the mm-hmm. month. Yeah. So it was very exhausting. But I was 21. You know, I had the energy to do that. Yeah.
So then when did you start to make the shift to starting to write, think about writing, directing, and producing?
Yeah. If you ever hear, like, Britt Marling's one of my favorite actresses and writers. If you ever hear her story on how she started writing, it's almost identical. It's with my personality, like, it was pretty quick that I realized that I was not going to get the roles I wanted with, like, it just wasn't going to happen for me. I had no connections, you know. I was like, or it would have happened. I knew that, like, I was just exhausted. You know, I was doing so many auditions, and I started spreading myself really thin, and, you know, I started losing my love for it, you know, just in a couple of years, because, you know, I was getting, you know, I wasn't making money, and I really wanted to, you know, I sort of really want to move into features, and it's really hard, you know, it's really, because mm-hmm. everything kind of funnels up in this industry, and so, you know, that was, like, really hard, and I kind of realized pretty quick that, you know, I was like, I could write. Maybe I should just, like, start writing. I can't remember when the flip switched, you know, that, like, maybe I could write screenplays. I can write stories, you know. Mm-hmm. So, I just started reading scripts. Well, I knew what scripts looked like by that time because I've been auditioning so much. So, like, that was key. And then, I just wrote. Plunge was my first short film that I wrote and produced. And I hired... Like, that was a really special project for me because like, I had this story. One of my friends passed away when I was in high school, like, one of my good friends. And, you know, my first experience with, like, real death. And it was heavy, and it was kind of haunting me for my whole time in Hollywood, my first few years. And so, you know, I wrote the short about it, and I hired I raised $2,000 on Kickstarter. And I hired one of the best humans I've ever met, Ezra Lunell. He directed, I worked with him on, like, a couple Chapman films. And so I hired him as a director, and he brought on a whole MFA student crew for me. And we shot that in one night. It's not my best, but I learned so much on it. You know, I hired a SAG actor that I knew from it, and I knew that I figured out that I could get my SAG eligibility if I worked on a film with a SAG actor. So, like, I produced a film, like, I, you know, wrote a good, got myself basically in one go, I, you know, wrote something important to me, produced it, like, learned how to produce, got one of my best starring parts at the time, got my SAG eligibility. And, you know, probably the sweetest part about this is that Christmas I screened that film in my hometown for my family and, like, friends and everyone else who, like, lost this person, and then dedicated that film to him. So I remember after I made that short, like it's such a huge point in my career, because the light turned on. You know, never gotten any festivals. I didn't even have any money to submit to any festivals at that time. I learned then you need to budget for posts and stuff. But like, it was like a light turned on that, wow, like this is amazing. And the whole experience of filmmaking and telling a story I care about was just so much more epic than any of the shorts I've ever worked on. Like, it was just so much more personal. And the ability to kind of, I remember that weight was like lifted. I was like, wow, like I kind of dove into something that I was struggling with, and created art out of it, and I was like past it. Like, as soon as that film was done, I was like, I'm free from that burden of that. I get why it happened, you know?
Yeah.
So that was, yeah, I mean, a really amazing project, and that's when it all started, the writing. Yeah.
Perfect. Let's talk about the play that you wrote, Rise.
Yeah.
I think you mentioned that was in the Hollywood Fringe Festival. Maybe quickly just tell us, what's the premise of that?
Yeah, that play, it's a modern day pastor, like, you know, an emerging church pastor is visited by a woman from his past that has, you know, knowledge about him that can destroy his entire new life.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
So how did you, so you wrote this as a play. When you wrote it as a play, did you think, hey, maybe this is going to be something that could be turned into a feature film? Or just you wrote it as a play and that was your idea from the start?
Yeah. So basically what happened real quick here is I was writing a few I started writing features after that short. So I'm going to dive into features and just start cranking them out, you know. And I had this neighbor, Brett Colbeth, who's still one of the best actors I've ever met. He would read them and he'd be like, dude, awesome, you're doing this. And then it was the Hollywood Fringe 2012. He's a great stage actor and he wanted to put on a play. So he asked me, he's like, you know, would you want to write a play, a stage play, you know? And I was like, yeah, you know, and so we started. I had this idea, and I knew that good work for me at least came from personal stuff, you know. And so I had some past experience growing up in like Christian America, that was, you know, it still is like sort of. I'm glad that play came out because I was able to create this narrative around it, and kind of work through some of those things. So I just wrote this play, and we workshopped it for like a month, and like we had, you know, he had a director and a company. And we worked hard and fast, and then we put it up. And yeah, I mean, it was like it won best world premiere out of like 300 pieces or something.
Wow.
Like that.
So you mentioned that
it was amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. So you mentioned that you were able to option this through this Hollywood Fringe Festival. Did you invite producers to come out, or does the Hollywood Fringe Festival just have enough of a reputation that it attracts producers to it? How did that option come about? Is basically what I'm getting at.
Yeah, so basically what happened is that a lot of it has to do with the actor. Brett Colbeth's one of my best friends. Like, you know, he's a very great, talented actor. And this is a huge role for him, too. He also, like, lifted, the material was solid, but his performance really lifted it to the next level. I mean, it was a master class performance. A lot of people came out to see it. Like, the LA, there's a lot of reviewers that came out, and, like, word started going around the fringe that people, there were like other producers there that were like, we're going to option this script. And people were starting to talking to me about optioning it and turn it into a screenplay. And he got word of it, and, you know, which is smart by him. And he, which is an actor, I think it's really brilliant. But this is the best part he's probably ever had. I don't know if I haven't kept up with him so much since, but at least to date, I think he would say that. And so what he did is he wanted to make sure he was locked in on that part. So he got a group of investors from Chicago, and they started a company, basically, and optioned the script, gave me a development deal, basically, with him attached. So it was a huge thing for him, or a huge thing for me, a huge thing for him. And that's really how it came about. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's brilliant, and it's a really smart play.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah. Well, perfect. So let's talk about your other film, Adolescence. What's the premise of that film?
Adolescence it's the story of one of my good friends out here, Mickey River. It's his life story. Huh. And it's about like a young teenager from an abusive household meets a free-spirited scene girl that kind of takes him on kind of like on a fast lane lifestyle of drugs and addiction. So it's kind of like a classic drug, you know, bad romance story.
Okay. And this script you sold to Winter Sonnet Pictures. Maybe walk us through that. How did you get in touch with them, and how did you ultimately sell it to them?
Winterstone. Yeah, yeah. They so basically we Mickey. I think this was my 10th. It was funny because I used to hear around Hollywood is like it takes 10 features to sell your first script. And I was like, I've always been like, nah, it's not, you know, if that's the way it is, so be it. But it'll only take me a couple. And it was literally my 10th script, like my first like actual sale, mm-hmm. like on a spec. And it was literally my 10th, which is kind of funny. But Mickey had this great story. He was like, he had it in a short form content and he was working on that. I was working on something else. And then, he came to me and then we wrote a treatment and then we wrote a screenplay and we built this project for like 2 years. You know, I really I had like a failed feature right before that and I had a couple. I was trying to get a couple huge projects off the ground that were way above what I could do at the time, mm-hmm. looking back as very ambitious projects. And he had this and I was like, you know, I just want to work on someone else's story that's not just me, you know. And so I was like very excited to kind of get behind him and help him since I'd been, you know, writing quite a bit more. And so, you know, once we had a good first draft in place, we just literally did what we could for like 2 years. We didn't have like a lot of connections to money people. We just didn't. But we did have lots of connections to actors, writers, people in like what we did in those circles. So definitely unorthodox filmmaking. We just started casting without having like, we kind of just were like, what can we do today now? So we really just started building it and like attaching talent and auditioning. And I had a connection with a casting studio. Then we cast there for like 6 weeks, which was really amazing. And you know, Mickey's also really good with marketing. He's like a really he's really good at, you know, marketing himself as an actor. And so he really was bringing so many options to the table in terms of producers and people that, you know, big names. I mean, there was a lot of talk, but I mean, there was a lot, even there was, we went through like a lot of potential A-listers even that were interested, at least through, which was crazy for me. You know, I'm like, I don't even know how this is happening, but it never happened, which it often doesn't in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we just built it for 2 years and then out of nowhere, we kind of gave up and then we couldn't get it going. And then out of nowhere, Mickey's management, Winterstone, like that company found it and they wanted to do it. It was like at least 6 months probably since we worked on it. And then I just got a phone call and I guess like all that pre-work we did and yeah, we made a deal and that was pretty much it, you know?
Yeah.
So. Now it's 2-3 years. It just premiered literally at the Chinese last month. So three years from that sale to it getting until it's done. Yeah.
So, well, let's dig into your, one of your latest feature films, The Astrid Experience. Start out again, maybe you can give us a logline or pitch. What is that film all about?
Yeah, The Astrid Experience. So Astrid Experience, the logline is a recovering alcoholic writer meets a free spirited scene girl who shows him he has something more worth living for.
I got you. And where did this idea come from? Was this also a very personal story?
This one's actually really my story from, you know, probably about 2015 to 2016 until now, or until like between a couple year period between 2016 and 2018. And yeah, I mean, it really started as I was working with this actress a long time ago, like back probably in 2012. A lot of good projects came out of that year. A lot of like seeds of good projects came out of 2012. And I wanted to do something with her, really low budget that we could shoot over a night, you know, and shoot very cinema verite, mumblecore almost style, just to make something, you know. I was just very frustrated with my million-plus-dollar projects. I couldn't get off the ground. And I'm just like, let's just grab a camera and shoot. That never happened. Things went south with us. And so I had this, it was 2000, end of 2018, a lot more artists, musicians, like a lot of people just wanted to make a movie. And I'm like, what do I got that we can make, you know, with everything I have available, what do I have that I can make a respectable film? So I brought out, I had this little 50 page first draft kind of the script, so from 2012. And it's a really cool Hollywood insider industry love story. And so I just took a couple days. I had 30, 40 more pages to work with. And I just infused everything from 2012 until now, basically, into that script and made it very personal and very modern, so to speak. And, you know, we filmed it. Yeah.
Yeah, perfect. So how did you raise the money for that?
So this one, it was through, this one is mostly self-financed, mostly by my co-producer, John Thatt, and also a little bit by me. And we wanted to, I knew from experience, it's key to keep, as a director, especially as a writer-director, it's key to keep creative control. I mean, I've trust, like, anytime I felt, and maybe it's just bad experiences, but anytime I trusted, unless it's like, I mean, if I'm trusting David Fincher to make my script, that's one thing, but I'm not so far. So, like, anytime I've trusted someone to make it the way I've written, it hasn't happened, not even close. Mm-hmm. So I was like, I'm keeping creative control of this at all costs so I can make a film a feature film that has me all over it, you know? Mm-hmm. So the best way to do that was, like, you know, figure out how to make it as cheap as possible, self-finance. We've had many investors come to us with terms that just aren't favorable to us. So, like, we're like, whatever we have to do, it's like, I listened to this great interview by Mark Duplass. It's literally like, whatever you have to do to keep, you know, make it the way, because you're only really as good as your last project, you know? Mm-hmm. So I'm like, that's it. I mean, so far it's been self-finance and it's in post, and now we are looking for, because I was able to provide so much up front, I want to make sure that I'm doing justice to my own work I'm not a post person. I don't have any skills in post. So I want to make sure I'm hiring proficient people to do justice to the work that we all did up front.
Sure.
So that's definitely, I think, is going to cost us some money. So we are considering investors there, but we've gotten all the way through production by ourselves so far.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So what advice would you have for writers that are looking to break in? I love just your do-it-yourself attitude and not waiting around for permission from somebody else, just getting out there doing it. But what do you recommend? What do you recommend to someone that stumbles into LA? What would be the first thing you told them to do?
First thing, I would just say from a writing perspective, because, you know, I know that's the focus of this podcast, is just, like, start writing, honestly. Like, you just need material and you just need to write bad scripts. I mean, everyone thinks they're the best. I thought my first script, and it's not terrible, but I mean, I thought when I wrote my first feature screenplay, this was it, you know, like it was, and there's no one that can tell me anything. I'm the best writer in Hollywood. Like, and it's really, I needed to get to 10 to realize how not good my first one was, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I think really just, like, start writing scripts. Some people really studied the technique and learned by doing that, which I think is good. I think maybe a healthy do that as well as you're writing. But I just was just like, any ideas, I just started writing, you know, just that's it. Like, I didn't really, I knew what a feature looked like because I read feature screenplay. I'd say read feature screenplays too. Read the best scripts ever written. Read like 100 of them. Go to the WGA, find the 100 best screenplays ever written and just, like, read them. There's this website, Script Shadow, who had all these great spec scripts, like these these kind of that have never been made. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm just reading all these super innovative screenplays that I'm like, this is how you write a spec that sells, you know? So I say just, like, read screenplays and then just start writing.
Yeah. Yes.
I really think that's it. I mean, I think that's the one surefire way to get stuff out.
Yeah, sound advice. And often the simplest advice is the best advice. What have you seen recently that you thought was great? I've been asking guests recently what they saw. I'm always looking for recommendations. Netflix, HBO, Hulu, anything, even something in the theaters. What have you seen that you've really enjoyed and thought would be good for screenwriters to check out?
Yeah. I just watched a ton of indie movies because I was researching editors for the Astrid Experience. Mm-hmm. Stranger Things obviously was awesome. Watched that. Game of Thrones, other than the last episode, I really liked. and I think indie movies wise, I watched so many good ones recently. There's this. This film, The New Romantics on Netflix, is really good. And actually, you know, this film that's really good on Netflix is People You May Know. I think you had the producer of that was on here on your show a long time ago.
Huh.
Yeah, People You May Know on Netflix. I'm talking to the editor, Jonathan Mellon, who's super talented. He cut Rashida Jones's first film, Jesse and Celeste Forever. People You May Know is really awesome. It's a cool look at, like, modern metropolitan indie filmmaking.
Okay, yeah. Perfect. Yeah, I'll have to check that out. So what's the best way for people to keep up with what you're doing? Twitter, Facebook, a blog, anything you're comfortable sharing, I will round up for the show notes.
Yeah, I pretty much, social media, I pretty much only do Instagram, okay. And that's at Cal Barnes, just my name, at C-A-L-B-A-R-N-E-S. And then obviously email as well. I think my email is on IMDb.
Okay, yeah. Okay. Well, perfect, Cal. I really appreciate your coming on the show. Just a fascinating story. As you know from listening to my podcast, I'm all about, you know, just people getting out there and just doing stuff. So I just applaud what you're doing, and I welcome you back next time you finish the film and want to promote it a little bit.
I love it, man. Yeah, thanks for having me. It's a real honor. Thank you.
Perfect. Thank you. We'll talk to you later.
All right. Take care.
Bye.
A quick plug for the SYS Screenwriting Analysis Service. It's a really economical way to get a high-quality professional evaluation on your screenplay. When you buy our 3-pack, you get evaluations at just $67 per script for feature films and just $55 for teleplays. All the readers have professional experience reading for studios, production companies, contests, and agencies. You can read a short bio on each reader on our website, and you can pick the reader who you think is the best fit for your script. Turnaround time is usually just a few days, but rarely more than a week. The readers will evaluate your script on 6 key factors: concept, character, structure, marketability, tone, and overall craft, which includes formatting, spelling, and grammar. Every script will get a grade of pass, consider, or recommend, which should help you roughly understand where your script might rank if you were to submit it to a production company or agency. We can provide an analysis on features or television scripts. We also do proofreading without any analysis. We will also look at a treatment or outline and give you the same analysis on it. So if you're looking to vet some of your project ideas, this is a great way to do it. We will also write your logline and synopsis for you. You can add this logline and synopsis writing service to an analysis, or you can simply purchase this service as a standalone product. As a bonus, if your screenplay gets a recommend or a consider from one of our readers, you get to list the screenplay in the SYS Select database, which is a database for producers to find screenplays and a big part of our SYS Select program. Producers are in the database searching for material on a daily basis, so it's another great way to get your material in front of them. As a further bonus, if your script gets a recommend from one of our readers, your screenplay will get included in our monthly Best Of newsletter. Each month, we send out a newsletter that highlights the best screenplays that have come through our script analysis service. This is a monthly newsletter that goes out to our list of over 400 producers who are actively looking for material. So again, this is another great way to get your material out there. So if you want a professional evaluation of your screenplay at a very reasonable price, check out www.sellingyourscreenplay.com/consultants. Again, that's sellingyourscreenplay.com/consultants. To wrap things up, I just want to touch on a few things from today's interview with Cal. I really liked what he said about his college professor when he was taking the acting class. Just the professor giving him some validation, telling him that he thought he was really good at this. Finding that validation is so important. People, you know, told him that he was good, and that was just enough of a push to get him motivated to move to Los Angeles. It didn't necessarily make his career. It wasn't his big break. Having this college professor tell him that he was a good or had talent as an actor, but it was enough to move the ball down the field just a little bit. And I'm really sensitive to this issue. I'm originally from Annapolis, Maryland, and I didn't have any mentors or role models. There were no successful screenwriters in Annapolis, at least none that I knew. And there was really no screenwriting or filmmaking community, at least none that I was involved in. And so it was hard to find any sort of validation. It was hard to even feel like moving to Hollywood was even a reality. And I remember the summer before I moved out here, when I would tell people I was going to move to LA to be a screenwriter, you know, the strange looks of disapproval that I would get from, you know, friends and neighbors kind of roll their eyes. Oh, well, you'll be back here in 6 months. You know, just sort of snide remarks. And it did shake my confidence. Is, you know, I just would think to myself, you know, am I making a mistake? What do these people know that I don't know? I never had that validation. I never really got that. I wasn't great at school. So certainly no one ever thought, none of my professors ever thought that I had any writing talent or anything like that. And it would have been, that would have been so nice to have. Now, for me, I had a college buddy who was also interested in moving out to LA. Neither one of us, as I said, neither one of us were good students. So we didn't have tons of job offers out of college. So it wasn't like we had tons of opportunities or anything. So that was definitely a factor. But, you know, getting that validation and feeling like you can actually do this, and feeling like it's not a complete pie in the sky is so, so important. And for me, I think, as I said, I had this buddy who was also interested in moving to LA. So that was a big factor. I didn't feel like I was moving here alone. And so I'm thankful for that. The other thing, and I've mentioned this also on the podcast, was I sent out a few query letters before I came, and I actually had one guy call me. And the query letter was terrible and all that, but he was nice enough just to call me. And that for me, I think, was the validation that I needed. Was it just felt real talking to someone that was actually in Hollywood, you know, in production, making movies, in development, was just such a moment that it just all of a sudden felt real. And I think that combined, at least for me, combined with not having any job opportunities out of college, and also having this friend who was very willing to also move there with me, that was enough for me to be validated and for me to take that push and make that leap. But getting this validation, even from some smaller sources, is just so, so important. And this is one of the reasons why I'm not so down on the smaller screenwriting contests. The small screenwriting contests, they're not going to get your career just launched into the stratosphere. It's going to be a slow, you know, slow plod forward. And the smaller contests, they can provide some of that validation. Even if it's a small contest that only gets 100 scripts and you get a semi-finalist, you know, you're one of the top 4 scripts or 10 scripts or something, that just, you know you're doing something that, you know, feels like other people are responding to in a positive way. And those little things can add up, and those little things, those little bits of validation can motivate you and keep you motivated. You know, and I think that is just so important and should never be underestimated. Ultimately, if you're going to be successful in this business, it's going to be a long journey as a screenwriter. There's going to be a lot of ups and a lot of downs. So you're going to need these small little signposts of validation along the way to keep your spirits up, to keep you motivated, and just to keep you going. And I think, you know, starting with just the local acting class or maybe the local writing class and seeing if you can get some validation there, entering some of these small contests, doing a short film, writing and producing a short film, and entering it into even a small local film festival, seeing how people respond to it. Those are the things that can kind of just start to build your career, start to motivate you, start to make you feel like this isn't just a pie in the sky. This isn't just a, you know, shot in the dark or something that's just, you know, not realistic. And again, I'm really sensitive to this because I grew up in a place where filmmaking was not, it wasn't anything that anybody did. There was no real film community in Annapolis, Maryland, or certainly not a thriving film community where you had people making money and earning a living from it. So I didn't have that perspective and didn't get that validation. But it is out there, and especially now with the internet and everything else, it's easy to find the local film festivals. It's easy to maybe reach out to the local film community, find a local screenwriting class, and try and get some of that validation. And that can be the sort of the foundation for which you start to build your career. Anyway, that's the show. Thank you for listening.